8. I'm Mark Maron. It's 6 past the hour here on Air America Radio, and this is Morning Sedition. Good morning, geniuses, philosopher kings and queens, working class heroes, progressive utopians with no sense of humor, of course, lurking conservatives, of which there are more than I even realized, Mark Riley.
Where?
Good morning to you. Oh, they're out
there. Good morning to you. Did you have a good birthday yesterday?
It was
okay. The rest of the day was okay?
It was all right. I can't say that it was a great birthday. You know, I went home. I did my work. I had, I took a run. I sat and wondered why I was alone. Then I, you know, I had a can of vegetarian chili and some brown rice. Woohoo!
Didn't run into any lurking conservatives during your run.
Oh, no, but I found out someone was a conservative that I didn't know was a conservative. A couple of, you know, some real good friends of mine called me up and emailed me. I want to thank all the listeners that sent the nice emails. That did make my birthday a little less depressing. I am not sad about getting old, but I was wondering, you know, because as years go on, Riley, you expect the birthday to be something that it isn't necessarily, which is like, you
what,
want the
festive?
Well, I want all my friends to sit around wearing the stupid hats and singing,
okay.
You know, and going, we want ice cream. I didn't even have ice cream because, you know, I'm feeling unusually porky. So, but that's my own issue, and it's not important to the world. Now, what I would like to say before I get into the business of bashing Michael Brown some more, talking about a guy that is just despicable, and to see what he did yesterday in terms of blaming everybody in the world but taking responsibility for himself. We're going to get into that in just a second. Morning Sedition is going to be in New Jersey next week. We'll be broadcasting live from Maxwell's in Hoboken, New Jersey. That's next Friday, October 7th. I want you to stay tuned for details on that. But here's what I was getting at with the lurking conservatives. Dig this. As you know, some of you know, we had Chris Wilson, who is the proprietor or the web manager of, the Now That's Up.com, which we featured yesterday, which is a website. It was an amateur porn website that began to feature pictures from the war zone taken by soldiers who were sent to Chris Wilson in exchange for membership to his porn site, and he posts these pictures taken right off of digital cameras of soldiers in combat, and they're graphic, they're horrible, they are from the point of view of the soldiers. Many of the captions on the website are horrendous and smug and glib and just brutal. But it is some of the only photographs that you see out of the war zone from the point of view of soldiers. Now, that being said, we had this gentleman on yesterday. We got one email in response to our segment, with anything critical to say. We got about 50 or 60 or 100, I don't know how many email of people saying, what was the site? What was the site? But the email we did get, this is one of the great progressive faults, is not being able to see past your own ridiculously narrow ideology in terms of assessing what is being presented. Here's the email we got. As I listened this morning, I heard that you had the founder of NTFU.com on your show to discuss his quote-unquote porn site. I'm not writing to complain like others I'm sure have. No, they didn't. That you featured an operator of a porn site, but the content of the site relating to Iraq and Afghanistan is beyond disgusting. Yes. That is me saying yes. It is beyond disgusting. I think we said that yesterday, did we not? I completely understand the need for people to see the reality of war. Do you? I'm sorry, I'm talking to the guy as I'm reading this as well. Our mainstream news disinfects and sanitizes all the reports to the point that war is viewed as a video game. I do think that the American people need to see more of the truth. However, NTFU.com is not the answer. Instead of providing an insight into the violence, it allows posters to display photographs of every gory thing possible in war, exactly, and then with text that celebrates the violence. Yes, exactly. The site is not about proving an education to the horrors of war, but instead glorifies the murder and killing of Iraqis, which is how the war is being fought and being presented on some level, is it not? I visited the site after you mentioned it, and all I saw were repeated celebrations for mass murder. post after post was filled with macho BS and haranguing for death and disfigurement. Now, I would like to say to the writer of this, that is exactly the point of why we sent you to this site. It not only in a reasonably objective way, outside of the context that it had to be, that these pictures had to be shown on because of the nature of our press, is that this is exactly it. You have the soldier's point of view, you have the reactions of people in this country, and you have, honest to God, real pictures that are gory beyond belief, that do very much show the realities of war. And they do show the dispositions of some soldiers fighting this war, and this is a disposition that these soldiers are trained to have. So you got exactly the point of why we had this Chris Wilson and this website on our show. And then he goes on to say, in conclusion, I am disgusted that you would feature NTFU.com on your show. I would ask that you go back and consider again the role that the site really has to play. Furthermore, perhaps the larger story is why our beloved troops, who can do no wrong, are on a website celebrating violence, mayhem, disfigurement, and the humiliation of the Iraqi people. Well, is that not what they're doing? Maybe I don't understand where this guy is coming from, because that is the point. You missed the point. We presented the point perfectly reasonably. If you are unhappy with the context and ashamed or aggravated that this is the only place you can get this information, it seems to me that the information that you gleaned was exactly the point you were trying to make. I'm not sure I understand the email. It is grotesque. It is horrible. It is pervaded and taken on by and executed by some very, you know, macho and very much programmed American troops who are trained to do that type of killing. That is their job. That is what they are hired to do. Now, the reality of seeing it so graphically may have upset you, but I think the point was exactly what he took from it. Now, the interesting thing about this story now is that the Army, as of yesterday, has opened investigations into whether or not American troops have been sending war zone photographs of Iraqi war dead to now that's up.com in exchange for porn membership. And the New York Times apparently tried to contact Chris Wilson yesterday, and they were not able to contact him. And we talked to him yesterday morning.
Yes,
do you get
did.
Frightened by some of the feedback that you see on your website around these pictures? I mean,
I get a lot of creepy phone calls and a lot of creepy emails.
Like what?
Oh, I've been threatened to be the next person to be beheaded. I've been contacted by Al Jazeera to come and talk with them, and I don't know.
But no American press other than us,
no,
really?
No, the American press is either not interested or, I don't know, I haven't heard much from them. A lot of overseas press, but no, the American press seems uninterested.
Isn't that wild, Riley, that we talked to the guy yesterday, and today the Army opens investigations into whether or not American troops have been sending war zone photographs to this guy? I mean, this is today. I have to assume the timing seems a little suspect. I would like to think that we do have some lurking conservatives out there listening, and apparently they are in the Pentagon.
Well, yeah, and see, the thing is, I don't know whether the Pentagon will actually have any power to stop this thing from taking place, but obviously... we reached him. I don't know why the New York Times or the Pentagon or whoever else wanted to get in contact with him, wanted to reach him. We both went up on his website this morning before we came on, just to make sure it was still up. It's still up. It's still there.
And the interesting thing, an Army spokesman said, if the soldiers have posted the images, their actions could violate the Uniform Code of Military Justice, which defines conduct unbecoming an officer or an enlisted person. And then a Pentagon official questions whether or not they violate the Geneva Conventions, which set standards for treatment of remains of those killed in combat. If the Pentagon is wondering whether or not Geneva Conventions were assaulted somehow, or that they are violated is the word I am looking for, they're nervous. See, the truth of the matter is that these pictures represent something very real. They represent the way this war is being waged, and they represent what war looks like from a soldier's point of view, and even the captions on the photographs represent the point of view of the military. That is a truth of war. This is a truth of war that has gone back since the beginning of war, but it is what it is. It is the truth of war. And clearly the Pentagon and the Army are nervous that this truth is getting out, not just because of how it makes the U.S. troops look to Iraqis but to how it makes it look to us. So I want to respond to that emailer who, you know, who thought that it was beneath us or wrong for us to talk about this website, that he missed the point entirely. It is essentially that you can look at that website from the point of view of whoever you are and take what you want from it. That is the relative objectivity of that website. Granted, the context is sad. In the sense that it, you know, that kind of truth has to come through a porn site. That's just the way this country operates right now. And the way it's being used by some people is one thing. But the way it should be responded to by progressives or liberals is that this is heinous, that this is murder on any level. And it's a sad state of affairs in both terms, in terms that we have that the troops are who they are, and they are doing what they are trained to do. And that's disturbing. It's an upsetting reality of this world, and the repercussions are the results of that, those actions are those photographs, which is just heinous and disgusting and completely morally violating.
I don't know if the Pentagon thinks it can actually stop soldiers from posting this stuff. Apparently, they've had some difficulty, which means I think that they've been looking at this already. They've been having difficulty identifying a lot of these guys if they don't have their unit markings very clearly in the photographs.
But it's just the bottom line is these guys are trained to do that, and they always have been trained to do that, and that is a reality of war, and what they're doing are those photographs, and that is a reality of war, period. Then you take your opinions from there. If you want to choose to judge the captions or the context, you're missing the point. It's 16 past the hour. When we come back, we're going to talk about some new unionizing. Apparently there's some plans that they're going to take on Walmart. We're going to talk a little bit about the Lindy England sentencing as well. And, of course, Michael Brown, the blame monster. 17 past the hour, Air America Radio.
Morning Sedition, delivering you from evil in 3 hours or less. Air America Radio.
There was sadism on the night shift at Abu Ghraib, sadism that was certainly not authorized. It was kind of Animal House on the night shift.
Get ready for the wildest comedy of the summer. It's Donald Rumsfeld's Abu Ghraib Animal House. Starring Lindy England. Charles Grainer.
You can't do that to our pledges. Only we can do that to our pledges.
Chip Frederick.
Now, we have an old saying in Delta. Don't get mad. Get even.
And Donald Rumsfeld as Dean Wormer.
Fat, drunk, and stupid is no way to go through life, sir.
It's the slobs versus the snobs in this hilarious prison romp. Donald Rumsfeld's Abu Ghraib Animal House. You'll laugh till it hurts.
Thank you, sir. May I have another? Thank you, sir. May I have another?
Animal House.
22 past the hour. It's a Morning Sedition classic. Horrific satire for your enjoyment. Hey, look, you know, we're not condoning the website. Now that's
You said that yesterday.
Now that's effedup.com. You spell the word effed, if you know what I'm saying. You understand, right? Effed. Now that's effedup.com. We're not condoning it. We're not saying that it's good. There is pornography there. There is brutal pictures of killed people from a war zone. This is a microcosm. You can assess it however you want. You can judge it as somebody who is against all war. You can judge it in terms of how you see the American troops or how you feel about the war. There's a million ways you can judge it. You can judge it in terms of its context. It is rich in possibilities in terms of what you want to look at as what is wrong with this country. And in communications, you can look at it as a fault of the news media. There's a million ways to look at it. We're not saying it is good or bad. It exists. It's important. It's important enough that today the Army is investigating it, that the Pentagon is investigating it after we spoke to the webmaster yesterday, Chris Wilson, who the New York Times says was unavailable for contact after we spoke to him yesterday morning. So if the Pentagon Pentagon thinks it could be dangerous, if the Army thinks it could be dangerous, don't you think it's worth some of your progressive or liberal attention to understand what is going on and what is happening on that website? I think so. So why don't you check that out? And in relation to this website, in relation to the type of photographs that can be seen there, we have the Lindy England sentencing yesterday, and we have this is also based on digital photographs that came through the hands of a soldier that revealed one of the great heinous transgressions of this conflict. Riley?
Well, yeah, and we're talking now about somebody that got 3 years in prison, a dishonorable discharge from the Army. Are they still giving out those digital cameras? I had heard they had kind of tried to ration them a little bit after Abu Ghraib blew up in their face.
You can do it with your phone.
Yeah, I know. It's ridiculous. And what has happened now with Lindy England sentencing is that the grunts have all been made accountable. Mm-hmm. If you look at the people who have been imprisoned in this situation, let's run them down.
What'd she get?
She got 3 years. Mm-hmm. England got 3 years and a dishonorable. Charles Grainer, the alleged father of her child, and the convicted ringleader of the Abu Ghraib prison abuse, a 10-year sentence at Leavenworth. You've got Chip Frederick, who was sentenced to 8.5 years. You've got former specialist Jeremy Civitz, who got a year. Former specialist Roman Kroll got 10 months. 10 months. Former specialist Armin Cruz, 8 months. Former sergeant Javal Davis, 6 months. Former specialist Sabrina Harmon, also 6 months. And former specialist Megan Amble was discharged without serving prison time.
How much did Donald Rumsfeld get?
None.
Really? How much did Stephen Cambone, undersecretary, over there?
None.
Huh. That's
and
odd.
You see, that's where it ends. And this is the problem uh-huh. with the way the military operates when these kinds of scandals are exposed. They go after the grunts. They make the grunts fully accountable while the people further up the food chain continue on in their jobs, whether they be military people, whether they be intelligence people who supposedly egged these folks on to do this, or whether it be the civilians in the DOD.
And I think it's important to know that, you know, the pictures from Abu Ghraib represent the repercussions of a military mindset, of a negligence, on an intentional negligence to allow these people to do whatever they wanted to do and then to not take responsibility for it afterwards. I think that is also, you see this with the grunts in terms of what you're seeing on that website, is that you're seeing an allowance. This is the behavior that is expected and encouraged in war.
This is that boys will be boys kind of mentality when the seed is planted when people are kids, and then as they grow up, as they're indoctrinated into the military, right along with following orders comes the notion that, you know, if during wartime there are certain things that are allowed. And it's fascinating to see the military now talking about possible violations of the Geneva Conventions. Those couldn't be the same Geneva Conventions that Alberto Gonzalez told George W. Bush he didn't really have to pay any attention to, could they?
Yeah, I think they are the same ones there, Riley. And coming up next, we're going to talk about Michael Brown, the ex-FEMA head, who just was like a blame sprinkler yesterday. He was just spreading it around, just spraying it everywhere. And it's hilarious and sad. And I felt a great deal of contempt. 27 past the hour, Air America Radio.
Morning's Edition with Mark Maron and Mark Riley on Air America Radio.
If you want to stand, sit there and berate me because FEMA did not provide 5 gallons of gas for someone to evacuate because they were on fixed income, I take great offense to that. My biggest mistake was not recognizing by Saturday that Louisiana was dysfunctional. I know what I'm doing, and I think I do a pretty darn good job of it.
What an idiot. That's from the Michael Brown hearings yesterday. It's 34 past the hour. It's Air America Radio's Morning's Edition. What an idiot. In keeping with the neocon policy of blame dispersal and then hopefully reassignment, Michael Brown blamed everyone he could. If this guy was drowning, he would take the lifeguard down with him. In his opening statement, he did cite two problems, not having more media briefings to cover his ass as it became more bare, apparently, and that he wasn't able to facilitate relationship therapy between Mayor Nagin and Governor Blanco, which is ridiculous. So let the blame begin. Here's what he did. He blamed, This is Michael Brown yesterday blamed the Department of Homeland Security for not acquiring better equipment ahead of the storm and taking his money away. He blamed the state of Louisiana for being dysfunctional, as he didn't he didn't realize it. That's what he said. He blamed a hysteric media for what he said were unfounded reports of rapes and murders. He blamed the American people for not playing a more active role in preparing for disasters. He blamed Mayor Nagin and Governor Blanco, of course. He blamed George Bush, Andrew Card, and Deputy Chief of Staff Joe Hagan, who he said he called to say, this is going to be a bad one. Now, Republicans and Democrats blamed him and were pissed at his blaming.
Well, yeah, and well, they should have been. You know, Michael Brown spent 6.5 hours before that congressional committee. That's probably the closest to an 8-hour day this guy has ever worked in his life. And I think he probably felt, because, you know, the committee was dominated by Republicans. Most of the Democrats, all but two, had decided to boycott the hearing. Two of them showed up. But it seems as though Brown thought he would get off easy because it would be mostly people from his own party that would be conducting the questioning. No such luck, as Connecticut Congressman Chris Shays, ended up saying directly in Brown's face.
Oh, no. Well, basically he said, I'm happy you left. That kind of look and lights like a deer tells me you weren't capable of doing that job.
Wow.
Yeah, that's some heavy words, right? And then Representative Gene Taylor, a Democrat from Mississippi, said, quote, the disconnect was people thought there was some federal expertise out there. There wasn't, not from you, end quote. And in response, Brown said, dig this. This kills me. Brown says, quote, FEMA doesn't evacuate communities. FEMA does not do law enforcement. FEMA does not do communications, end quote. This I will give you from FEMA's website, quote, the Federal Emergency Management Agency, a former independent agency that became part of the new Department of Homeland Security in March 2003, is tasked with responding to, planning for, recovering from, and mitigating against disasters. Basically, it does evacuate, it does do law enforcement, and it does facilitate communications. It is its job to facilitate all of those things. And this idiot, that's the best he could say. Michael Brown should not only never have a job again in government, he should be walked through the public square in shame. In shame. We should be free to throw things at him. Tomatoes and lettuce and stuff.
Well, like, you know what? Chris Shays, I think, was getting ready to throw a tomato at him, at least a verbal one. Let's hear what he had to say yesterday at that congressional hearing.
And that's why I'm happy you left. Because that kind of, you know, look in the lights like a deer tells me that you weren't capable to do the job.
And so I guess you want me to be the superhero that is going to step in there and suddenly take everybody out of New Orleans.
No, we want you to plan. How about a little humility, you pudgy-faced douche? I mean, what the hell is that? How about, you know, it's like, how about a plan? I mean, he's acting like it wasn't even his job. He's calling up the president and the deputy chief of staff saying, I think this is going to be a bad one. Yeah, no crap. What, I mean, I just cannot believe the lack of empathy and the lack of conscience that this little moron has. Everyone in this country knows that he was not qualified for the job. He had no experience at it. He was brought in by his buddy, who was doing him a favor because he was out of work because he got fired from a horse management company. What the hell? And he's got the nads to sit there and disperse blame like this and not take responsibility and act condescending on top of it? Oh, my God, do I hate people like this guy.
Well, I'm going to tell you, he even, during the course of the hearing, William Jefferson, congressman from New Orleans, had to repeat a question because Brown was busy with his BlackBerry. At another point, Chris Shays, Republican congressman from Connecticut, repeated a different question because Brown was busy looking in his notes. And, you know, it really went all the way down. And as he didn't have answers to some very, very basic questions that you would have thought the head of FEMA would have had.
Dude, he must have been jacked up on that big pharma confidence serum that they feed the president that makes his jaw go wickety-whack. You know what I mean? He must have given him some of that Rove juice. I don't know what the hell. This guy was a crybaby a couple weeks ago. This is not the kind of guy that stands up for anything. This is the kind of guy that goes home and goes, honey, I think I screwed up. 800 people are dead. I think it's my fault. Somebody got into this guy's head, whether it was Karl Rove or I don't know what they shot him up with, but they said, it seems to me this was a guy that was told before he went out there, look, just just stick by these talking points. You're going to be okay. You ride this out, and we'll take care of you. All right? Just stick by your talking points, and no crying. No crying. And I don't know what they shot him up with for him to achieve that, but that's what I saw.
Well, he's going to be, I'm sure, Joe Alba or one of these other guys that has their own private business. They'll end up hiring Michael Brown. These guys never land all the way down. They always manage to, like cats, land on all fours.
Let's talk about now moving on to how this administration is further screwing the people that, you know, managed to live through Michael Brown's oversight in the aftermath of Katrina and Rita, is that these new bankruptcy laws that are going to go into effect on October 7th basically turn bankruptcy courts into collection agencies for credit card companies. We know that. And they are going to make it real hard for the victims of the hurricanes to get their lives together. The new law makes it almost impossible to declare personal bankruptcy. A group of Republicans and Democrats tried to get the law amended to accommodate the victims of Katrina and Rita, but James Sensenbrenner, the heir of the Kleenex fortune, who apparently doesn't use them because he certainly has no feelings and is incapable of empathy or crying for anybody, said that the Republicans, the House Republicans, wouldn't have it. He said that there were provisions in the law that would enable the people left, quote-unquote, down and out by the storm, and they would be able to shed most of their debts, and that those who lost the fight over the law in terms of, you know, making this this legislation should get over it. So this guy's playing politics. This guy's got so much money, it's coming out of his ears because of people, stuffy noses and masturbation issues and crying all the time. This is what he made his fortune on Kleenex, this guy. So what he's saying is basically, look, this is a political thing, and you guys are just crybabies. No, there's a real problem here.
Well, there is a gigantic problem here because people who are trying to file, particularly from the New Orleans area, are going to find that, A, they're not going to be able to access their records necessarily. You can't just walk in the door and say, I want to file bankruptcy. You've got to come in with some records. Well, if your records are under 6 feet of water, what do you do? A lot of these records, by the way, the records that were kept in New Orleans are no longer even in New Orleans.
That's it. And not only that, in order to declare personal bankruptcy, in most cases, you have to do it in your hometown.
Yep.
What if your hometown is underwater? What if it doesn't exist anymore? And the problem also, according to some experts in analyzing hurricane-related and disaster-related bankruptcies, is sometimes you're not even going to see the financial repercussions of a disaster like this until months, maybe years ahead away, because you can't make an assessment. I mean, think about it. What if you're self-employed? What if your equipment was destroyed? What if your clients no longer exist because of their own damages? What if your property and home is destroyed? Your spouse's income is stifled or stopped? Your records are lost, as Riley said, and damaged either at home or at your lawyer's office, or that you're not even in the town anymore? What if your insurance doesn't cover enough of the damage? What if you're sick and have an existing medical bills, and you're still sick and you don't have a job anymore, and there's no more coverage because the hurricane ruined that? I mean, for all of the repercussions of a storm like this could really take years to settle. And most of the bankruptcies that are going to be declared around this disaster and around the repercussions of this are maybe like literally 2 or 3 years in the future, because people have no facilities to put their lives back together. And now they're going to get screwed again by this administration because of this legislation that, and Sensenbrenner has the gall to say that there's a provision in the current legislation that will enable them to shed most of their debts. You can't give these people a break?
They're not giving these people a break. And as you point out, you're talking 2 or 3 years down the road when the cameras are gone, when the faith-based money is gone, when the Red Cross is gone, when people have moved on to other issues. These folks are still going to be there. And, you know, these are not the poorest of the poor. In many instances, these are working people who've put together their own small businesses, and they're going to find that they have no hope and no way out of this situation.
Look, if you were a kid and had a choice between studying and saying God made it, what would you choose? We'll be back in a second. 44 past the hour, Air America Radio.
This is Congressman Barney Frank, and you're listening to Morning Sedition on Air America Radio.
Four 49 past the hour. It's Air America Radio's Morning Sedition. I'm Mark Maron. That's Mark Riley.
Hey.
Yesterday we had a gentleman on the radio, the proprietor and webmaster of NowThat'sEffedUp.com, Chris Wilson. Yesterday morning we had him on. Today an article in the New York Times claims that the Army is investigating his website. The Pentagon is investigating his website. So we do have some lurking conservatives out there listening, apparently. Chris Wilson, who we just talked to on the phone, we're going to have him back on to talk to again in just a minute, said that he had like 30 requests for media interviews yesterday after hours. I don't know what's going on, but it's going to be interesting to talk to him again. There seems to be quite a, when you got the Pentagon saying, well, there might be a Geneva Convention violation here, when they're actually honoring the Geneva Conventions publicly, this Pentagon, they're nervous. Something has happened. And we're going to have Chris Wilson on in a few minutes. Sometimes when you read the headlines, it can be tough to figure out just exactly what the mainstream media is saying. So luckily, we have an iNews 5000 Wi-Fi headline translator. Let's crank it up and feed it some headlines. From the Indianapolis Star. Here we go. Lindy England convicted in Abu Ghraib case. Translation? Lindy England convicted in Abu Ghraib case. Here's a translation now. Lindy England ready to return to jail in different capacity. From the Washington Post, Brown defends himself over FEMA response. Brown defends himself over FEMA response. Translation, Brown unqualified to defend charges of being unqualified. Houston Chronicle, here we go. Bush hints diversity will guide next Supreme Court pick. Bush hints diversity will guide next Supreme Court pick. Translation, Republicans found an arch-conservative Native American woman. Fact and theory, Riley. Fact and theory.
Sure.
Evolution's just a theory. No, evolution is a fact. Natural selection may be a theory among many that tries to explain certain elements of evolution, but evolution as a science and as in the definition of fact is a certainty. The Dover, Pennsylvania Area School District became the first school system in the nation to require students to be exposed to the ideas of intelligent design, i.e. creationism as science, and inserted into their curriculum. An attorney representing eight families who are challenging a 6-3 vote from an October school board meeting in 2004 says, quote, they did everything you would do if you wanted to incorporate a religious point of view in a science class and cared nothing about its scientific validity, end quote. They did get a witness today, yesterday, to validate that.
Well, yeah, and they've also got science teachers who are telling the press down there near Harrisburg, because that's where it is, the state capital, that they were pressured directly by school board members to teach intelligent design in their classrooms.
They want to retard the children of their community. They want to deny them a fact-based education. Evolution is a fact. It's science. If the intelligent design is a concept concocted by Christian propagandists over the last 15 years or so that basically states that the theory of natural selection cannot fully explain the origins of life or the emergence of complex life forms. So life on Earth must be the product of an intelligent designer, an unidentified intelligent force. Well, I'll tell you something. If these people are an example of his work, humans must be the glitch, and these are the malfunctioning ones.
I don't understand why these people cannot teach intelligent design in their homes to their own kids. They don't have to have it taught in the class as part of a curriculum. If you believe that there was a larger force that created the universe, then tell your child that at home and lead by example so your child believes what you say. You don't have to have a teacher do it.
That's because these idiots see Darwinism as some sort of, you know, intrusive and evil propagandistic point of view. They see it as a doctrine of some sort that is antithetical to religion. There are plenty of scientists, there are plenty of religious people that will make room for certain elements of religion in their outlook. It's just these morons want to make their children stupid. At a point in the history of this country where we can't even develop engineers, the training of kids, their interest in education is falling behind in the rest of the world, to have people in this country, adults, saying, well, that Darwinism, that's some crazy stuff, that's anti-God, and we gotta teach them that God is the guy that got made made Darwin or Satan made him. Yeah, if these people are out there, they are dangerous to the children of this country. These people are anti-American and they're dangerous to the kids. That's what I say.
You know, there's a side situation going on in this court case too. There are two reporters down there who have refused to give depositions because the lawyers for the school board, the ones that support intelligent design, say that these reporters exaggerated when they reported stories that said members of the school board discussed creationism in a public meeting, which would be a big, big no-no.
Yeah, one of the guys apparently said that I don't believe in this Darwinism. It's got to be 50-50, Darwinism, creationism. Where the hell do they get off calling creationism a science? Not only is it not a fact, it's completely unprovable. And this the guy that impressed me the most was a witness they had the day before yesterday. First, let me just read part of the statement that is read to students, all right? It is, quote, because Darwin's theory is a theory, it continues to be tested as new evidence is discovered, end quote. The first witness called the other day, day before yesterday, by the plaintiffs was a Brown University professor named Kenneth Miller, and he said, quote, these words are tremendously damaging, falsely undermining the scientific status of evolution. What that tells students is that science can't be relied upon, and certainly it is not the kind of profession you want to go into, end quote. He also said, quote, there is no controversy within science over the core proposition of evolutionary theory. Intelligent design is not a testable theory in any sense, and as such, it is not accepted by the scientific community. And then he's talking about the book Pandas and People, which is the book they're supposed to read as opposed to biology. They read the Pandas and People book. All right. Talking about the book Pandas and People, Miller said, quote, it almost entirely omits any discussion of what causes extinction. If nearly all original species are extinct, the intelligent design creator was not very intelligent, end quote. Yes. So this is what you got going on. And I, as I've said before on this show, and I do say in my stand-up act, when a Christian, and I'm not saying any Christian, I'm talking about a Christian whack job. I don't want any emails saying, you lump Christians again. I'm not. Christian whack job who says that evolution is just a theory. It doesn't explain everything, and everything's so complicated, is exactly like saying, I don't understand it. It must be magic.
You know, we've had Barry Lynn from the organization Americans United for Separation of Church and State several times. And the thing that really impressed me about Reverend Barry Lynn was that he recognized very clearly that this kind of intelligent design implementation in schools is the first step, just like the ban on so-called partial birth abortions is a first step down a road that will turn our schools into theocratic institutions if we're not very careful about it.
Exactly. And the scary thing about it is 64% of the people in this country believe that both should be taught. You know why? Because they're lazy and they're enabling stupidity. That is the problem. When people tolerate things that are wrong, that are culturally and scientifically, they're just wrong on so many levels, and they're trying to be like, well, maybe we should. No. You are enabling what you're talking about. You're enabling the possibility of a theocratic state. You are enabling cultural retardation. You are enabling a stifling of progress on so many levels. And on the bottom line, you're damaging your children.
Do you know that the teachers were required to watch a film that was critical of Darwin's theory of evolution? It is amazing what this school board did. They intimidated teachers into following this intelligent design model.
We're going to talk again to Chris Wilson, our guest from yesterday, from NowThat'sEffedUp.com. Apparently, the Pentagon is after him now. The Army is after him now. And the New York Times couldn't get him on the phone yesterday. But we got him in a few minutes. Stay with us. It's 57 past the hour. Good morning, geniuses. 6 past the hour, Air America Radio's Morning Sedition program. I'm Mark Maron. That's Mark Riley.
Hey.
I just inhaled a bag of sourdough nibblers.
You saw those. You gave
from the vending machine.
I ate some snack wells, so I can't really say.
I kind of like that name, sourdough nibblers. So look, in keeping with the neocon policy of blame dispersal and then reassignment, Michael Brown blamed everyone he could. If this guy was drowning, he would take the lifeguard down with him. Michael Brown, of course, the ex-head of FEMA, was at a hearing yesterday that day, and he got grilled by both Republicans and Democrats. And the bottom line was, he said in response to all of it, FEMA doesn't evacuate communities. FEMA does not do law enforcement. FEMA does not do communications. What an aimless idiot this guy was, completely incompetent, because I went to FEMA's website, and it says right there, quote, the Federal Emergency Management Agency, a formal independent agency that became part of the new Department of Homeland Security in March 2002, is tasked with responding to, planning for, recovering from, and mitigating against disasters. So it pretty much does everything that Michael Brown said it didn't do, so above everything else, he just didn't clearly understand what his job was.
Well, no, he was totally clueless. You know, they asked him how much FEMA spent on communications, the thing that he said they don't do. Mm-hmm. And you know what he said?
Mm-hmm.
Well, I don't really know, but I know it's a boatload of money.
Oh, boy.
Yeah.
After about, the day before yesterday, a jury of five male Army officers took about 2 hours to reach the verdict. The 22-year-old Lindy England was found guilty of one count of conspiracy, four counts of maltreating detainees, and one count of committing an indecent act. She was acquitted on a second conspiracy count. She was sentenced yesterday, Riley. What was that sentence?
3 years and a dishonorable discharge, which puts her right about in the middle of the people who've been convicted in connection with Abu Ghraib. It's gone from 6 months to 10 years.
Look, now, yesterday we spoke to a gentleman on the phone, Chris Wilson, who is the webmaster and proprietor of Now That's FedUp.com. You would have to spell out the F word in order to get there. This is a fairly heinous site, a fairly graphic site in its content. There is amateur porn on the site that you must pay to see, and also on that site are graphic images sent to the website by soldiers in the field in Iraq and Afghanistan depicting what they see, what they've done in terms of killing. You see graphic images of dead bodies, of heads blown open, of burnt corpses, of detached faces. And the captions on some of these photographs are very, very disturbing in their glib sort of mocking and sort of macho kind of tone. But the bottom line is these are some of the only pictures you will see, graphic pictures of war. When the graphic pictures of war in the history of warfare in terms of post the introduction of photography has been very important in elevating the consciousness of people who may not know exactly what that looks like. Now, despite the context, despite the captions, which are important as well to see how the military is trained to engage in and take these actions and do this type of work or killing, if you are an anti-war person, you should look at this. If you're not an anti-war person, this might make you anti-war. And the question also is, well, what if they were Americans? Well, what if they were? I would be even more horrified, and probably just as much horrified, actually, as seeing that kind of death put upon anybody. But I would still be angry at the nature of war. And we have yesterday we spoke to Chris Wilson, and yes, today an article came out in the New York Times saying that there is an investigation ongoing, beginning by the Army, by the Pentagon, into whether or not soldiers did send these images, whether or not it does transgress or violate Geneva laws, Geneva conventions, if this Pentagon is using the Geneva conventions as some sort of stance. They must be frightened because of what this implies about the American military. We do have Chris Wilson back on the line. Good morning again, Chris.
Hey, how's it going, guys?
Hey, Chris.
So, buddy, we talked to you like less than 24 hours ago, and now all of a sudden there's this storm of stuff coming down on you. So what happened yesterday? Apparently, since we've talked to you, there's now an Army and a Pentagon investigation into the nature of the photographs.
Yeah, it seems that since after I talked to you, there's been a flood of more mainstream media picking up on this and trying to get comments and trying to talk to me about it and asking me a bunch of questions.
Did the military or the Pentagon contact you?
No. I've been reading a couple articles that come out, and basically, from what I understand, they're looking at it from my point of view is they're not going to interfere, as it's going to boil down to my right of free speech versus the government getting involved.
So that's not the case they're trying to make. They're trying to implicate the soldiers, as they will do.
Well, yeah. And I don't know, and like you guys probably know more than I do about military law. I don't know much about it. The Geneva Convention was actually explained to me a little bit differently than I'm seeing it reported in some of the press. But you know, who knows?
Now, Chris Wilson, if it turned out that the Department of Defense went after some of the soldiers that they could identify from pictures on your website, would you consider taking those photographs down? Or if not, would there be a circumstance under which you would just become a porn site again?
Oh, of course. I don't want to get any of the soldiers in trouble. This was something for them to let off some steam. This was something for them to show their views to the world. And they definitely don't need to be in trouble for it. If they contact me and want their photos removed, I'll remove it as soon as I can.
What about if the DOD contacts you?
If who contacts
the Pentagon?
It's like I said before. The Pentagon, if they're going to contact me and say that, would you please remove it because we don't like it, then no, it's not going to be removed. But if they can give me a justifiable reason why it should be removed, then yes. Such as it reveals troop activity or anything like that.
Compromise national security.
Yeah, if it compromises, of course I'll remove it, but not because they don't like it.
Now, do you ever question the authenticity of the photographs?
No. I pretty much take the guys at their word.
Okay.
I know what to expect as far as quality-wise from the pictures and what I'm seeing after viewing so many of them. That I know, you know, what to expect, but yeah, I pretty much take them at their word for it.
Now, Chris, do most of the soldiers that send you pictures do so with their unit identification on their uniforms clearly visible in the photographs?
No, usually they don't. The ones that show them, you know, show the soldiers patrolling, you know, normal everyday pictures, shows some schools and stuff like that, they will, but with the gory ones, they've been good about, they've left out their names and their ranks and any insignias on their uniforms.
So you're saying on some level that some of the photographs, you know, I didn't stay on the site for that long, but some of the photographs you have on the site do show proactive ventures on behalf of the soldiers, like school building and doing good things?
Oh, yeah. There's a lot of soldiers helping kids, soldiers passing out necessities, like water and food and... It's not all gore. It's just a chance for the soldier to
show his
send in what he's feeling and what they're doing that day, whether it be good or whether it be combat.
Here's a question for you, Chris. Why don't you make another site for this stuff? Why does it have to be in the context of this porn site?
Well, to begin with, financial reasons. It's financially easier to do it the way that I did it than to do it a different way. Basically, that's it.
Okay, so it was just a matter of, like, you didn't want to, you know, spend the money to put up another site.
Yeah, it gets expensive.
Okay, and yeah, but do you ever think about maybe, is part of your intention to entice people that may go to see these photographs into joining the porn site?
No, people aren't going to, if they don't want to join, they're not going to join. Those two things are so far apart that I don't think it's going to be, you know, people that go to see that are going to go to see that. People that go to see the other thing are going to go to see the other thing.
Yeah, I guess, you know, I wonder about that sometimes. I think that people who have a morbid fascination, on some level, that can easily sort of, you know, kind of leak into sexual desire and perversions thereof.
Yeah, I saw a psychologist on TV talking about something like that.
Yeah.
And he was saying the same thing, that they can be related as far as arousal from one or the other can be actually pretty closely related, but I don't know anything about it.
All right. You know, it's only like we talked about yesterday. It's sort of a sad and interesting indication that, you know, in order to get these type of graphic details, they've got to make their way into the consciousness of this country through barter around a porn membership.
Yeah, but to my defense, there's no naked women jumping out at anybody. If they wanted to look for the naked people, they were actually going to have to search for it, as well as the war pictures.
Yeah, okay.
Jumping out at anybody. Either. I mean,
yeah, well, you know, the site
being tricked. Or,
yeah, I know. The site is now that's effedupp.com. Now, Chris, it's interesting also that, you know, it is not unusual for pornographers or pornography publications to break stories or do some of the sort of, you know, hardest satire around, because they do take chances that other outlets aren't willing to take.
Oh, of course. Yeah, I mean, take Larry Flint for
example. Exactly. Well, Chris,
Oh, okay.
Go ahead. What?
No, I was just going to say, Larry Flint, I remember a couple years ago offered the $1 million for the soldier that was wounded. Okay, I can't remember her name right off the bat. But the
Jessica Lynch.
Yeah.
Yeah, he offered $1 million and then decided he didn't want to post them. So.
Well, what I want to do is keep, if you could, can we check back in with you to see how this unfolds? Because we find it very compelling and interesting that the day after we talk to you, all of a sudden there's Pentagon interest and there's the Army investigations going on. The New York Times is claiming they can't get hold of you.
I'll tell you what, I got a call from CNN and they're sending 7 people down here this morning.
Oh, my God.
Really? 7?
Seven.
Wow. So
Anderson Cooper and who else?
Anderson Cooper's going to stand out in front of your house in a windbreaker going, yeah. There's some pretty heavy porn inside, so I want you people to buckle up, and maybe some of you might need to evacuate.
Yeah.
Thanks a lot, Chris. We'll talk to you soon.
Thanks, Chris.
Hey, take it easy.
Take care.
Well, it's 17 past the hour. It's Mark Maron here with Mark Riley on Air America Radio's Morning Sedition program. You know, who's got a bigger Google or Yahoo? We'll get into that in a second. Please stay with us.
MorningSedition.com. Our guests, our comedy, your blog. MorningSedition.com. Air America Radio.
Twenty-two past the hour. It's Air America Radio's Morning Sedition program. I'm Mark Maron. That's Mark Riley.
Hey.
Oh boy, we're gonna we got some interesting stuff coming up. If you your DVD collection might be completely useless. You might as well just box it up and put it next to those VHS tapes that are on top of that box of Betamax tapes. I still have like 2 Betamax tapes. And if you want to,
what?
Yeah, sure. And maybe you can just incinerate them all at the same time with your cassette tapes. You know?
Well, you know what it is, because you spent time in California, man. That's where the Betamax was really big.
Yeah, I grew up in New Mexico. That's where I got it. Yeah. I just know. And then I was told it was a good format, which will lead into a story that we're talking about in just a second. Because this is how they screw you.
I know.
Is the 2 formats, and you're like, well, which one do I get? Or then maybe I'll get both of them. And then all of a sudden, you know, it just turns out to be one, and you get a technology. Anyways. That's how they get you. For those of you who are just tuning in, here are a few highlights of what we talked about on the program. It's time for today's Morning Sedition Cliff Notes. The U.S. military reportedly killed another alleged number 2 leader of Al-Qaeda in Iraq. Al-Qaeda released a statement saying, "The joke is on the Americans. He was going to blow himself up tomorrow anyway." Intelligence sources say this may have been Al-Qaeda's 3rd most dangerous second in command. Microsoft and Intel are teaming up to create the next generation of DVDs. Microsoft spokesman said, quote, "We are working on a computer right now that can also broadcast television shows in high definition. It's so crystal clear and lifelike, it will come with a warning to consumers to avoid watching Larry King live." End quote. Scientists. Well, he's, ooh, scary. Oh, he's coming right out of here. Look at those suspenders. Yikes. How old is that guy? Scientists will use satellites to monitor panda sex across the globe. This has gone too far, people. If they can monitor pandas having sex, it's only a slippery slope to satellites monitoring me having sex with pandas. And I will not stand for that, my friends. Scientists still don't understand why pandas have a poor breeding record. The only theory right now, because of how pandas look, they only attract mates who want to cuddle. Oh, I don't want to have sex with it. I just want... Oh, look at the... All right, those are the Cliff Notes for today. Yes, that would be the reaction there. It's a classic, Riley.
Uh-oh.
Google once listed the number of web pages in the Google Index as 8.17 billion pages until Yahoo claimed 20.8 billion pages. Now, there is a dispute ongoing about how the pages are counted. But in the meantime, Google is not going to post its number anymore because it's not the size that matters. So Google is putting it back in their pants. Google still claims it has the biggest, but no longer needs to dangle it in front of us.
You know, I don't know which one is which sometimes in terms of who's got the bigger number of hits or number of photographs or items or whatever, but it is amazing to me. I was listening to a report yesterday. Google stock price is like $316 a share.
Oh, I should have. Damn it.
And still going up.
Yes.
Every day.
Yes.
What stock goes for $300?
$20 a share.
It's unbelievable.
It is unbelievable. I mean, you know, some of the big GM, Ford, they're going $35, $40. Here's Google, $300.
And it's all based on something I barely understand.
Well, magic. It's magic.
It's certainly magic, but there are people in this building that understand it. My computer crapped out yesterday. I don't know what the hell happened. I tried to do some repairs on my own. Then all of a sudden you turn it on and you get this scary, like, what language is that? Why are there numbers? How come the screen isn't pretty and colorful? I'm in trouble.
Uh-oh.
Yeah, well, look, Microsoft and Intel, they want to make your CDs obsolete. They, along with DVDs, sorry. Yeah. But CDs as well, probably, eventually. I'm sorry, I'm responding to something that happened in my head. All right, they want to make your DVDs obsolete. They, along with Toshiba and Universal Studios, are getting behind the new HD DVD format, as opposed to the Blu-ray disc format, which is being backed by Sony, Apple, HP, and Dell. See, this is how they get you, Riley. Microsoft's new operating software will, and Intel's entertainment technology will support the new format. But the Blu-ray format will be available on the other company's computers, and the consumers will be screwed until all the computers can support both formats. See, that's how they make the big dough.
It's amazing to me. On the one hand, you've got the software people, Intel and Microsoft. On the other hand, you have the hardware people, the Sonys, the Apples, the Dells. Who's going to win? This is a Titanic battle going on.
And you just got a Nano.
I got Apple a Nano for my birthday.
And already, it took you seconds. He's in the office today with eyes like going, it's amazing. Amazing how this sound can come out of this little computer.
Thing. I thought it was the work of Satan, but it actually sounds good.
Hey, Satan feels and sounds good sometimes. I have the Mini. You have the Nano. I'm sure that our guest, Ultra Girl, is going to come in here with the Maxi, with the huge one, with the 60 gig.
Is that the one in the backpack?
Yeah, she's got but that wouldn't be very convenient, wouldn't it? The Pocket DJ, this is, her web name is Ultra Girl. People know her as that. She's got this whole book on playlists, on which playlists are essential, which playlists to have. You got artists, you got styles of music, you've got dance mixes. I mean, it's a pretty impressive book if you don't want to think at all about what you put into your iPod. We'll talk to her in just a second for some guidance, because I think you need it, Riley.
Yes.
Of course I don't, because I know exactly what I'm
doing. Bring it!
It's 27 past the hour. It's Air America Radio's Morning Sedition.
Morning Sedition with Mark Maron and Mark Riley on Air America Radio.
Thirty-four past the hour. It's Mark Maron here with Mark Riley.
Yo,
it's Air America Radio's Morning Sedition program. So Riley, if you're like Mark and I, you've just recently joined the ranks of iPod owners, but you're still trying to figure it out. I didn't realize, as I said before, it was going to be a second job just loading that iPod.
That's right.
Our next guest is going to help us figure out what music to put on your iPod. She's the author of the Pocket DJ Ultra. What is it? Is it Ultra Girl?
Ultra Girl, yeah.
Ultra Girl's Guide to Building the Best Music Library. Good morning, Sarah Lewitton.
Good morning.
How are you?
I'm good, actually, surprisingly, at this hour.
You've had 9 Red Bulls. You've been up all night and you're here. No, yeah. I kid. The Pocket DJ. This is Ultra Girl's Guide to Building the Best Music Library. I was pretty amazed. You've broken it into categories. These are basically playlists that you put in here. A lot of playlists,
yeah,
right?
Yeah, tons of playlists. Thanks to the Red Bull, I was able to compile this list. But I just wanted to make a really comprehensive book of essential playlists for your iPod, because a lot of people, they get their iPod and they fill it up with, like, what, 20 songs?
Or else you put so many in there that you have the same reaction you have to your CDs. You're like, I can't even look at them.
You give up.
Yeah, you give up. Surrender. Yeah. What does Ultra Girl mean? Where does that come from?
I was named after a feminine product called Ultra Femme. My brother did it as a joke, and he gave me a screen name for AOL of Ultra Girl.
Okay.
Yeah.
So that's you.
Yeah.
People know you as Ultra Girl.
Yeah.
Okay, got it.
Yeah.
I got a question.
Yes.
When you DJ, do you go in with a playlist, or do you go in with a group of records from which you pick as you play?
I actually go in with a bunch of mixed CDs that I pick from.
That's cheating!
I know.
That's cheating!
Or full albums, you know, but I prefer to do CDs because I'm a small girl and it's hard to carry records.
I've got a question, though. I call me crazy because I don't know the standards of integrity for proper DJing, but why wouldn't you just go in with your iPod, set it on one big playlist and say, I'll be back in a little while.
Actually, I have a DJ partner, Karen, and she DJs from an iPod, which the only problem with that is that you can't change the pitch levels of the song, so you can't speed
can't
it
mix
up.
Them. And you can't go...
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, not, right. Not that you would normally. But.
No?
Right?
I guess I don't go to many parties. Don't you make noises with
you
the
do.
Listen to me like I'm an old man.
No, that's kind of old school.
Don't you make the scratchy noises on the records? I thought you made noises on the records. All right, look. So this book is a pretty huge book, and I'm looking through it. And you've got celebrity playlists. You've got essential playlists of essential artists. Now, obviously, I look through this, and I see David Bowie, and I'm like, hey, wait a minute. You didn't put that song on there. How come only one song from Scary Monsters? So you're going to have that response to some of this.
Yeah.
This is your choice.
Yeah, I've had actually a lot of people responding to the order that I put some of the songs in, which, I mean, to me, it seems like such a weird thing to argue because it's all a matter of opinion, and it's my opinion, and that's the only one that matters when reading this book.
I'll say.
There you go. Now, I got a question for you because I got a real practical problem.
Okay.
I've just had this thing for a week. It only holds 500 songs. I got 3,500 CDs at home, which is about 30,000 songs.
Right.
Now, how do I do triage so I'm not spending the rest of my life?
We need a bigger iPod.
Yeah, I know that too. But, I mean, how do you distill this stuff?
Well, one of my friends told me that his iPod is only filled with good songs, which I think is a very good standard to hold to when filling up your Nano. So, you know, going through all your 3,500 CDs, just like pick out a couple good songs from each album, unless there's one that you like the most.
Well, no, there's probably about 300 of which I would have to put the entire album.
Wow,
I mean,
Riley's
just that good.
Then you just need another Nano.
Yeah, Riley, there's not enough time.
The Nano is probably not for you. You should have gotten the 60 gig like I did.
Well, I was a birthday present. I couldn't come in. Hey, take this back.
I'm interested in this section here. I like this section, the celebrity playlist, because it does give a glimpse into, you know, an artist, sort of what defines their favorite music, and then you could sort of judge that against their style. Like you got the guitarist from the Smashing Pumpkins. His playlist includes some interesting stuff, because I wouldn't have thought, you know, he would listen to Graham Parsons. I wouldn't have thought that he would listen to Elliott Smith, but that's kind of a cool little section. Who are some of the bigger stars you got in here?
Joel from Good Charlotte. I have Brandon Flowers from The Killers.
Mm-hmm. Are these just friends of yours that you asked?
Yeah, a lot of them are friends of mine that I asked. The Kaiser Chiefs I have. Also, you know, Duran, not really a good friend of mine. Simon LeBon is up for favors at all times.
You just got to ask him. He'll give his email address out. Hey, Simon, will you come over and have lunch with me? I'm lonely.
That's terrible. Now, there are two areas of music that I enjoy listening to, and it would seem to me it would be tough to try and program. Classical and jazz, a lot of times, you know, I noticed, for example, you had Sibelius' Symphony No. 5 in there. Now, there are probably about 150 different versions of that. How do you choose which one? Same thing for jazz.
Well, you consult your friends that know a lot more about the genre than you do. Honest answer. I have a lot of friends that studied classical music in college, and so I just consulted them and said, you know, which one is the best one to go to?
Yeah, usually if you're like me, Riley, you just put your favorite 40 versions out of the 150 of that particular piece on the iPod.
Well, you know, there's a big deal in jazz now because this Monk Coltrane collaboration that has up until now been off the set. It was recorded in 57, just came out yesterday. And again, it's got versions of a lot of stuff they've done before, but it is because of the fact it's so rare, it's an extraordinary piece of music. I mean, just stuff that I got to put in my iPod the minute I get a hold of it, which will be later today.
See, look at this. You got Led Zeppelin, essential artist, and like for me, Led Zeppelin, I would just be like, all of them.
Yeah.
Right? I mean, didn't you have that problem when you compiled some of the artists?
Well, I have to be honest with you. I was never the biggest Led Zeppelin fan growing up.
Whoa.
I know.
Thanks for being here.
Travesty.
It's okay. It's okay.
But, so I got into them via mixtape that my friend made. And so being able to pick out the best songs for Led Zeppelin and some of these other artists was actually not as hard as you would think, because it's just about picking out the songs that you think would be the most relatable for, like, someone who's not the biggest fan.
I think this is a great service you provide, actually.
Thank you.
And I got to be honest with you, because there are bands that I like, and there are bands that I know a little about, but I don't know their music.
Mm-hmm.
you know, I know one or two songs. I know that I have friends who are like, these guys are geniuses. And you're like, really? Yeah. How did I miss the genius? Because I just saw Guided by Voices, mm-hmm. and I was talking to my friend. It's like, which album should I have? Because people don't know Guided by Voices.
There's like 87 albums.
Right, they got 900 records out, yeah. and no one knows song one. And you actually provide a great service for people who may be looking for music by bands that they've heard of, mm-hmm. and to give a pretty good sort of overview, just from your point of view or from what you've compiled from friends you know who like the music, mm-hmm. to sort of sample them.
Yeah, exactly.
And I think that's a great service to have. That's like having like a good friend who like knows stuff that you don't, like you were just saying, and refers the music to you.
Yeah. You know, I always have friends that are just getting into a bunch of bands that I'm really into. Like, you know, I mean, Radiohead is one example. I think everyone is probably a big Radiohead fan of my social group. But there's still some people that aren't very familiar with them, and so there's always been times when I've like made Radiohead mixtapes for them.
Yeah.
And it's not about picking out the most obscure songs, but it's picking out the songs that best represent the band. And I think that's what I was trying to do with a lot of these playlists, is pick out songs that best represent the artist and is a good introductory.
Like Dolly Parton. See, yeah. I would, it eventually got 16 Dolly Parton songs, 20, 19, and I wouldn't have, I've known maybe two.
She's an incredible songwriter. She's super yeah. underrated.
Yeah, I agree with that. You've got Nine Inch Nails here. George Michael. See, I would not have any of those.
I love George Michael. I'm also a huge Neil Diamond fan. And
oh, you got something in common with someone here.
With who?
With Dan Pashman.
Dan Pashman.
He's a huge,
I'm going to have a Neil Diamond and cover band play at my wedding.
Oh my God.
Yeah.
Are you engaged or are you single right now?
I'm sorry, I'm off the market. But,
but wait, Dan, isn't she away?
She's in Slovakia scouting out Neil Diamond cover bands.
You're listening to us right now. Yeah, what is Maren doing?
Yeah.
Sweet Caroline is my ringtone. I love it.
Wow.
That's a classic.
Yeah. What do you think of Bruce Springsteen?
You know, I wasn't the big Bruce.
No.
The
wait,
hello.
It's
hold.
Over.
I am from New Jersey. I am from New Jersey.
Oh, okay.
So. You must have transferred into school or something. You must have missed. You must have missed kindergarten.
That was a brief courtship here. From Neil Diamond to Bruce Springsteen in the pot right away.
Someone in Slovakia is going,
yeah. Hey, Sarah.
I'm not a big Bon Jovi fan either.
When you go to a party, you know, when you go to DJ a party,
yeah.
What are the songs that you figure you have to bring with you?
Okay. The parties that I DJ are sort of the indie rock ilk. So it's a lot of Joy Division, I like Level Tears Apart by Joy Division. They have a song called Y Control that always does well. Okay, Billie Jean by Michael Jackson is the number one most requested song on the dance floor, amazingly. And also anything by Madonna. Like a Prayer does really well, because then everyone starts dancing and singing along and having a good time.
All right.
Yeah. No, you don't even have Bruce Springsteen in here.
No. Yeah, you know.
I'm not a huge Bruce Springsteen.
I had to make my battles and pick them, and he
was. Well, I think this is a pretty good little book here. I think it's as I said before, it's informative. You've got baby songs for your baby. That's cute. Alternative happy birthday songs. And like my first impression was like, who's she to tell me what to put in my iPod? But as I look at the book, I realize that, you know, you're presenting a lot of information that people just don't have. And, I need to consult it, I think, because I realized when you were just talking about, you know, these celebrity playlists that you have here, I'm like, I don't know who that is. I don't know who that is either.
You know who the Killers are, don't you?
I should know who they are. Why don't I know? Like, I know.
I don't know. They're like a top 10 band.
Well,
Sorry. I didn't mean to belittle your music taste.
Look, you can call me old.
Look, there's a pin on my cover.
No, I'm going. But see, this is what you did for me. Now I have to go out there and get this, because now that I have an iPod Mini, I can keep up with new music like I wasn't able to, because it's such a chore to go through my CDs. So right now, I'm listening to the new Sunvolt, and I got some. Is it time?
This is the Killers.
Oh, he's putting it on.
Uh-oh.
But see, when I was alive when the music they ripped off to sound like this was around.
Yeah, but we weren't.
Oh, that's the important
clearly
part.
Something she has said before.
Yes.
Shut up, old man.
Yes.
They're not stealing. It's our version. Did I translate that properly?
Sort of.
There you go.
All right, well, Sarah Lewitin, Ultra Girl, thank you for being here. The book is The Pocket DJ. It was great talking to you.
My roommate is such a big fan of the show, Lindsay.
Hey, Lindsay. Hey, Lindsay. Thanks for listening. It's 46 past the hour. We'll be back in a second with what? The War on Brains, folks. Air America Radio.
Thank you.
Hi, this is Lawton Smalls, Morning Sedition's Planet Bush Bureau Chief. You know why I'm praying for you? Because you're listening to Mark and Mark on Morning Sedition on Air America Radio.
Fifty past the hour, Air America Radio's Mark Maron talking to you. It's I'm here with Mark Riley. It's Morning Sedition. Our last guest, Sarah Lewitin. Her book, The Pocket DJ, is available. But also, she will be DJing Tarts of Pleasure. That's with her buddy Karen Plus One, and she is Ultra Girl. They DJ Friday nights from 1 to 4 a.m. at the Orchard Bar. That's here in New York City on Orchard and Houston. Tarts of Pleasure is the name, I guess, of the party or the evening, as that would be. You got to understand, Riley, I spent most of my life in comedy clubs every night. That's what I did. Every week, we bring you the latest news from the front lines of the four-year global war being waged by the Bush administration. Here with today's dispatch from the War on Brains is war correspondent Mort Milfington.
Dateline, Georgia, known as the Peach State, because the phrase home of over 500 recorded lynchings looks too cramped on the state seal. And Dateline, Kentucky, population 89% white, 11% scared. Put these two states together, and what do you get? No, not George Uckey, but the most bone-chilling incarnation of our president's twisted fantasies since the invention of the Whammo Water Weenie.
Yeah.
Yes, the war on brains continues, brownie lovers. This week, poorly funded flood control, crony patronage, and too many cocaine-fueled vacations to Crawford.
Yes!
Finally did what four brutal years of the No Child Left Behind couldn't do. Make two states voluntarily close their schools. Shameful. Ignominious. Yes, with fuel supplies dwindling faster than White House cooking sherry and gas prices approaching rapture levels, both Georgia and Kentucky either shorten their school weeks or shut down their schools altogether. Or their learning rooms. In fact, the fuel shortage is so bad in Georgia, they've already had to cut popular courses like Evolution, Satan's Plan, Who Won the Civil War and Why They're Wrong, and Pets Ain't Vittles 101. Mark?
Yeah.
To best illustrate this so even someone like you can understand, I'll play you two songs. Remember this old chestnut?
I said, Georgia.
Sorry, not enough gas. How about this little number?
Oh, the sunshine's bright out of my own Kentucky.
Sorry, ran out of gas again. Your Honor, I rest my case. Yes, ignoring the science of global warming, displaying rank negligence in the wake of massive storm systems, and deciding against using Barbara Bush's thick ankles to plug New Orleans East levee are the ingredients of the Bush education policy, his Xanadu. Mark, it's all about a little thing called synergy of ignorance. It's synergy of ignorance.
Yeah, I get it.
Or signorance.
Signorance.
Mm. Kentucky and Georgia, if you really want to save fuel, how about washing your hoods only once a month? And you don't have to pour gas on those crosses anymore. You can make the same statement with glow paint.
Glow paint.
So until next time, you lumpin' fans of Ted Nugent, you might want to do what your president says and conserve fuel. But keep this in mind. No matter how many people you cram into a Humvee, you're still a gas-hogging piece of crap with a teeny weenie. And that's today's dispatch from
The War on Brains.
Oh, that was a good one there.
Had a pretty hard edge to that, didn't it?
That was good. I just kept thinking about whether George Bush could name this sound.
That's you. That's you. You know. That's you putting your credit card on a notebook.
Uh-oh. Yeah, sure. So look, we just got this in, and I knew this a couple days ago, but I didn't want to hurt Riley's feelings.
Oh man,
I didn't want to hurt your feelings, man. An emailer from our show, a guy who emailed the show at sedition at what is it? Sedition at morningsedition.com.
Sedition not at, even close.
Yeah. Sedition at AirAmericaRadio.com.
I'm sorry, I'm drifting. But he said, dude, you might want to be more happy, a little happy about your choice to buy the Mini and not the Nano, because apparently the surfaces on these Nanos very easily scratchable. But that's not the issue. The issue is when it does scratch, it could screw the screen up and make you unable to see the cover art with your glasses. Glasses, you know, to enjoy the CD.
Well, you know what I'll do? I'll be preemptive and buy something to put over the screen so it doesn't scratch.
Yeah, you should buy this bulletproof metal casing.
There you go.
Yeah, it's actually a plastic.
That'll
thing.
Repel a nuclear attack.
No, it's like a rubber thing, so you can bounce it around. You can
here, catch.
Hey, Jim, are you okay?
You can see cover art on the new ones?
Yeah. You get put pictures on there. I don't take pictures of anything. There's no recordings of me anywhere on photo images at this point in time.
Oh, I have a few.
You do? Of me?
Remember the old days?
Oh, yeah.
Oh, yeah. September morning.
Oh, by the way, Apple is going to replace any Nanos with cracked or scratched screens. So, I mean, that's good news, I hope.
Yeah, well, yeah, sure. I'll talk to me when you're online waiting for that. Waiting, making that argument over at the Genius Bar.
No, I'm going over to, right over here around the corner.
Yeah, you'll go to the Genius Bar. Can I speak to a genius, please? Hold on. All geeks are busy at the moment. They should have given me a new Mini when I went in there, but he made me jump through the hoops and he made me fix the one I had. But
I actually had something wrong with my iPod that I recently bought, and they gave me a brand new iPod.
Uh-oh. Yeah, I understand that. Mm-hmm. We talked about that once, and I'm glad for you. All right, mine's working fine, thank you. It's my computer that has a problem. I hate when my computer speaks computer language. That's never a good sign. When I start up the startup screen, there's like equations instead of, you know, my wife and I in a picture that I took at our wedding.
Aww.
Yeah. Ooh. Yeah.
Now, do you
I got
have a Mac?
Equations. I don't have a Mac.
Well, that's why.
Exactly.
No. Whoa. Back up.
We got to go on that note.
No, I have a Toshiba, which our tech guy said is the best computer ever.
Well, he's crazy.
Yeah. All right.
Our tech guy's a boxer, by the way.
The other tech guy. Who's the other one? The new guy.
He owns an Arabian horse farm.
Mark Green. Mark Green is coming. Mark Green is coming. Come back.
Who's our tech guy?
It's 6 past the hour. Good morning. It's Mark Maron here with Mark Riley.
Hey.
It's Air America Radio's Morning Sedition program. Momentarily, we will be talking to Mark Green. And after that, in a few more minutes past Mark Green, we're going to be talking a little bit about Chris Wilson, who is the proprietor and webmaster of NowThat'sEffedUp.com, a website that we talked about yesterday. We interviewed Chris yesterday about some photographs he has got posted on his website that have been sent to him by soldiers in Iraq, in Afghanistan, about some of the atrocities that they are part of and experiencing and seeing in exchange for membership to a porn site. Now, the deal is that since we talked to Chris Wilson yesterday, he is now under investigation. He is not, but the site is, and perhaps some of the soldiers who have sent him materials are under investigation by the Army, by the Pentagon. The Pentagon is citing maybe violations of Geneva Conventions, and I'll tell you, when this Pentagon cites Geneva Conventions violations, they must be nervous about something. That I will tell you. A little business. Morning Sedition is heading to New Jersey next week. We'll be broadcasting live from Maxwell's in Hoboken. That's in New Jersey. Next Friday, October 7th. Stay tuned for details. Our next guest is a Democratic candidate for New York State Attorney General. He's also campaigning with Democratic mayoral challenger Fernando Ferrer. He's the co-author of the book on Bush, How George W. Misleads America. Welcome to the studio, the slightly hoarse Mark Green.
Good morning. I'm better than I sound, which is not hard. Mark 3.
Yeah, right.
No Mark need apply.
Now,
there you go.
Mark Green, tell me, you were laying something on us, and I think maybe it might be helpful to our listeners before, something that was told to you on how to treat that thing in your throat that you didn't do.
Catherine Grody is the actress wife of Mandy Patinkin.
Yeah.
Mandy is a twofer. He acts on a new show, and he sings beautifully. And when he has a bad voice, Catherine says he takes apple cider vinegar with hot water and gobs of honey.
Okay.
He gave this remedy to Bill Clinton, and it works. It works for Clinton and Mandy.
But you chose not to do it, Mark.
I'm going cold turkey.
Oh, there you go.
He's going to live through it.
This is Air America.
That's right. Is there any way, to please tell us, is there any way that Fernando Ferrer can beat Bloomberg?
Yes.
How?
Oh, I know this is radio. I'm supposed to say more than that.
Yeah, you can tell.
First of all, I learned humility the hard way. Michael Bloomberg was a bigger underdog in 4 years ago when he ran against me. I'm not Mark Green, listeners. Than Freddie Ferrer is today. In other words, they call it political science. It ain't a science. And sometimes an external event, God willing, nothing as horrific as 9/11 on election day would happen again. But you just can't predict. Mark Raleigh was around and knows that in 1989, it happened an Italian kid shot and killed a black youth in Bensonhurst during the Dinkins-Koch race. And then the world changed and Dinkins was advantaged. Conclusion, Freddie Ferrer has a numerical majority because of his party affiliation. Mike Bloomberg has a indescribable financial edge because of his multi-billionaire status and incumbency. He's a heavy favorite, but I've seen upsets bigger than this one.
How does Fernando Ferrer fight the Bloomberg inevitability factor? It seems as though Democrats who dislike Michael Bloomberg, who might be voting against Michael Bloomberg, or who certainly could be convinced to do so, all think Bloomberg is going to win. How does he fight it?
Well, I'm a proud Democrat. We lost a lot of elections in the past 5 years. What's worse than being defeated is when you're self-defeated. Can you imagine a batter getting up and going, there's no effing way I'm going to hit Randy Johnson tonight. I just can't do it. Mm-hmm. And then, you know what? He can't. Democrats have to have a little more courage. Understand that if they hang together, they can win. Hence, Ferrer's unity efforts are yielding some fruit. Howard Dean, John Kerry, Hillary and Chuck, etc. But the problem is that once it starts to harden, that the incumbent with money, with a decent record, will win. The only way to change that is with a goof, a gaffe, a stumble. Ferrer is a slingshot away from victory.
Now,
that's a big slingshot.
Yeah.
Mark Green, it seems like one of the strategies that Democrats are using against Bloomberg is to sort of constantly try to attach him to the policies of George Bush. And how's that? Is that really enough?
It's not enough, but you can't get across the Grand Canyon in one jump. You got to,
get one of those rockets like Evel Knievel had.
You need three of those to get across in three jumps. So one of the three jumps is to say Mike Bloomberg switched to the Republican Party purely for the political expediency of being their nominee and winning the mayoralty because he couldn't run as a Democrat. All right. He got that benefit. Now he's going to pay the price. He did give $7 million to Bush and the Republicans for the National Convention. He does support George W. Bush. That is not enough to win Mark the first.
Right. Yeah.
And the reason is it's not enough is this city is an island unto itself, almost literally. But Bush is so phenomenally unpopular. I know you've been saying it since day one of Air America, but fortunately reality has caught up to your polemics. It's true. Small point. There was an assembly election in Long Island, a primary a month ago. A Democrat now is about to be elected to the assembly for the first time ever.
From Long Island.
From Long Island in a hard Republican area in Suffolk. Conclusion. It's like a by-election in England when an election before the prime minister election hints that the party in power is collapsing because of Iraq, because of Social Security, because of Katrina. Bush is plummeting. He is an albatross around, I guess not Bloomberg's neck, but around his ankle. And the Democrats will rightfully use that. If Bush uses Republican line to get there, I'm sorry, if Bloomberg used the Republican line to get there, Ferrer rightly will use it to take him out.
Is the out-of-town help, the Howard Deans, who was here campaigning with him yesterday, is that really going to help him?
Small. If you're a progressive Democrat, you're already voting for Ferrer. If you're a swing moderate Republican in Queens or a so-called Giuliani Democrat in Manhattan, many are Jews, or a West Sider who kind of likes Bloomberg because he doesn't offend you racially, I don't think they'll be swung by Howard Dean. probably by this point, given that Bloomberg will massively outspend Ferrer in paid media, it's the debates plus a stumble. If Ferrer does better than expected, Bush-like, not that he's Bush, he's not, he's much smarter than Bush, but if he does better than expected, maybe the press's heads will jerk up.
What about these reports that African-American support for Ferrer is slipping a little bit? Is that how's he going to win back that support?
Well, he won it back slightly, enough to get 40%, which is the benchmark to win without a runoff here in New York. There are people listening to this outside New York, Mark, right?
Yes, they are.
You know,
they're listening all across the country, Mark. No pressure.
And in foreign lands.
And I'll be honest with you, Mark. Some are saying, like, what are they just talking about New York for?
The reason is, actually, this year, the only major races are the Virginia, New Jersey gubernatorials, and L.A. and New York mayoralties. L.A. mayoralty is all over. As for the African-American vote, it's been reliably 85-15 for the Democrat. I won at 75-25 against Michael Bloomberg. His $73 million was heard by African-American families as well by white families. For him, for Michael Bloomberg, a Republican, to get 40 to 50% of the black vote will be unheralded and much commented on. I don't think it could stay that level. Ferrer won back some of the black votes when Al Sharpton, a polarizing figure but popular in many African-American communities, endorsed him at the end to get him to 40%. I don't want to get too local, but Freddie Ferrer made a blundering comment about the Amadou Diallo shooting, where he said something that seemed inconsistent with what he said before. People can rightly argue whether that shooting was a crime or wasn't. A jury said it wasn't. But what you can't do in public life is flip-flop or switch. My guess is his depths in the minority community as a Puerto Rican, a Latino, a progressive Democrat will net him a majority of the black vote.
What did he say? What did he say?
What he said was...
It wasn't a crime.
He said, well, first of all, Freddie Ferrer, as borough president, had been arrested with 1,000 people, with Sharpton and Dinkins and Carl McCall, some of our leading citizens here, to protest Mayor Giuliani's cold-heartedness on race relations. Then he said, as a candidate, gee, I don't think it was a crime. And gee, maybe the cops who had been indicted for the shooting of Amadou Diallo were, quote, over-indicted, close quote. Yeah. But he said it in front of a white sergeant's group. So it looked like he was pandering. And you can be wrong, but you have to look courageous as a candidate.
Now, if the black vote splits 50-50 for Mike Bloomberg, or if it's in the 40 to 50% range, do you think that that says anything about the future of ethnic politics in the city of New York?
I wish I was smart enough to know the answer to that, Mark, the second. the answer is it might. Michael Bloomberg could be an anomaly. That is, when someone spends $100 million, more than anyone in world history, seeking office, it's $100 a vote, it distorts everything. It's not like two people Bush Gore, Bush Kerry on a relative financial equal playing field. So if he gets a substantial minority of the African-American vote, it's a huge deal for city politics. And it may have implications nationally, because if a candidate like George W. Bush, who won 9 and 11% of the black vote in 2000-2004, jumped in 08 to even 15%, it's unbelievably harder for a Democrat to win electoral votes.
Mark Green, thank you for being with us. Mark Green was our guest, candidate for New York State Attorney General, former New York City public advocate, co-author of the book on Bush, How George W. Misleads America. We'll talk to you again soon.
Good morning, thanks.
Thanks a lot.
17 past the hour. When we come back, we're going to get back into this Chris Wilson issue, the issue of now that's effedup.com and the Pentagon's investigation, the Army's investigation into a guy that we talked to yesterday morning and since then has gotten 30 invitations by major media outlets to the point where the New York Times could get in touch with him yesterday. We'll get into that again in a second. 17 past the hour.
Morning's Edition. Mark Maron and Mark Riley.
Don't just stare at it. Eat it.
On Air America Radio.
One past the hour, Air America Radio's Morning Sedition. I'm Mark Maron. That's Mark Riley. Keep it going for a second, Chris.
Hey.
Oh, we can't even get to that. I like this part. This is a great song. I forget that Guns N' Roses is this one album was awesome. Did you know that, Riley? Did you know that?
No, Guns N' Roses wasn't exactly at the top of the charts in the hood, if you know what I mean.
That's what I hear. Hey, we're going to have a bona fide, honest-to-God Kennedy on in a few minutes. That's all I'm going to give you.
Uh-oh.
Yeah, right now, though, as we know, there, that was the part I was waiting for. And then it goes away. Oh, there, it's back again. Now make it go away again. Oh, wow, that just takes a knob. Imagine that. Hey, as we know, Senate Majority Leader Bill Frist is suddenly facing investigations for a suspicious stock sale. Frist told the administrators of his blind trust to sell all his stock in HCA Incorporated, a chain of hospitals his father and brother founded. It turns out insiders in the company sold at the same time. And shortly afterwards, the stock price dipped because of a warning that earnings wouldn't meet Wall Street expectations. It's a good story. You know, but we thought it, well, you know, we could improve on it, maybe tweak it a little bit. So on here, we're going to do that on today's Morning Sedition Slander Minute. And here now is our slander correspondent, Ted Fields. Ted, what can you add to this story?
Well, Mark, it turns out Bill Frist wasn't always a doctor. He was briefly a police officer in Detroit. Hmm. Then a friend of his was murdered, and Frist flew to California to find the killer. The local police department assigned a couple of officers to keep an eye on him, but...
Wow, this sounds like a movie.
But he found out his friend worked for an art gallery.
Wait a minute. Wait, this is the plot to Beverly Hills Cop.
What's that?
The movie Beverly Hills Cop with Eddie Murphy.
Mark, there was no such movie. Anyway, what? Frist eventually ran afoul of the shady art dealer, Victor Maitland, played by the chilling Stephen Burkoff.
Okay, this is definitely Beverly Hills Cop.
Listen, Ted, I've been meaning to say something for a couple of weeks. I can see you're trying really hard, but you don't seem to... You really don't seem to have any sources.
Mark, if you're not interested in the story about Bill Frist, I'm not married to it, because I also have it on deep, deep background.
Oh, yeah.
That someone who worked with Bill Frist got shot, and it was connected to a series of robberies masterminded by a weapons kingpin played by Jürgen Prochnow, better known as the submarine captain in Das Boot.
Okay, wait, I got this one. It's Beverly Hills Cop 2.
Listen, Ted, do you have anybody at home? I mean, you seem a little kind of lost, like a lost soul. This all seems like a desperate cry for attention.
Mark.
Yeah.
There is no Beverly Hills Cop. There is therefore no sequel to Beverly Hills Cop. There is no Eddie Murphy. There is only Colin Farrell.
Wait, now, buddy, you feel neglected? You know, I see that. But look, this isn't the way to go.
I have it on good authority that Bill Frist died alone in a giant mansion, uttering the mysterious word... Rosebud.
All right, this has gotten sad. This has been the Morning Sedition Slander Minute.
I want to be Matt Drudge.
With our slander correspondent, Ted Field.
I know my limits, but at least I can slander people. I know I can do that.
Thank you, Ted.
Mort Milfington beats me when you're not watching.
Oh. Ted, please, get out.
Hey! I want love!
I know you do.
Mark
Green should still be out there. Go see if Mark Green will love you.
Uh-oh.
Maybe you guys can find some common ground. Hey, you know, this is this ought to be interesting coming up in just a couple of minutes. We've got Christopher Kennedy Lawford. That would be Peter Lawford's son. And I think that he is married to, would that be the sister of Robert Kennedy, one of the Kennedy sisters?
Yes.
So he's probably got some good stories to tell. Look at the pictures in this book, Riley. Peter Lawford was one of the smooth cats, man.
Oh, yeah, man. He was all over the films in the late 50s, early 60s.
His old man was a member of the Rat Pack.
Yeah.
And also there's some speculation around Lawford's relationship with Jack Kennedy and the whole Marilyn Monroe and... this stuff, man.
Oh, wow.
I don't know if he'll get into that. I don't even know if he's out there listening going, what the hell is that guy bringing up? Now we got problems.
Yeah, there you go.
No, he looks about my age. What do you think? A little older than me?
Maybe a little older than you. Me and you.
I was somewhat jealous of the Kennedys when I was younger.
Not me. I'm black.
Yeah. No, I mean, jealous because they always seem to, they were the ultra rich. I'll be honest with you.
They were America's family.
Do you want to know the truth? You want the truth?
Right.
When I was like 12 years old to about a couple weeks ago, I had a crush on Carolyn Kennedy.
Ah.
No, not a couple weeks ago. She doesn't look the same. When I was a kid, though, for some reason, I just thought that wouldn't that be perfect if I could just go out with Carolyn Kennedy?
Carolyn Kennedy, I think she's got another name now, Schlossberg.
Yes, she did marry a Jew. So there was no reason for me to doubt that I couldn't be part of that.
Yes,
you understand what I'm
sure.
saying? So when we come back, we're going to talk about all things Kennedy with Christopher Kennedy Lawford. And now there's some more Guns N' Roses. See, now I just want to jam, man. Now I've been jamming. I've been getting my chops up for the secret band in the in my apartment that's going to get together and play. All right, we got a Kennedy coming up, so hang out.
Tradition with Mark Maron and Mark Riley on Air America Radio.
Thirty-four past the hour. It's Mark Maron here with Mark Riley.
Hey,
it's Air America Radio's Morning Sedition program. Our next guest had an uncle who was president and a father who was a member of the Rat Pack. He grew up with fame, fortune, and an often tragic family legacy. He battled addiction to drugs that almost killed him, and now he shares his life story in a new book entitled Symptoms of Withdrawal, a memoir of snapshots and redemption. Please welcome to the Morning Sedition, to Morning Sedition, Christopher Kennedy Lawford.
Hey, guys.
Good morning.
So
you're the son of Peter Lawford, and your mom is the sister of the Kennedy clan.
Yeah, Patricia Kennedy.
You must have had it rough, man.
I had a rough life. Man, it was hell growing up.
I feel bad for you.
Yeah, I know, man. I'm telling you.
All those summers out in Hyannis.
Oh, God. I'm telling you. The Cape. Growing up in Malibu.
Yachts.
On the beach. Oh, it was
How'd you make it through?
I don't know. I'm here to tell about it, though. I wrote a book about it, you guys.
I got to read about it
in my book. Yeah.
So you're on Larry King last night. What was it like looking at him up close?
It was an honor, an icon. And literally, I'm sitting in I'm getting my makeup done, and he comes in and he does Mel Brooks's 2,000-year-old man while I'm in the makeup. I mean, like seriously,
he's doing shtick.
Like Mel.
Yeah,
and it was fantastic.
Yeah,
he was the 2,000-year-old man.
Well, you know,
he was fantastic.
Larry King does not hide his inner old Jew.
He does not. Yeah. He celebrates it.
Yeah, yeah. For sure. So now your book is doing very well, and the New York Times liked it.
They find it very
honest and exciting, and
Janet Maslin actually. Yeah. This is the second time she's been good to me. I did a movie called Kiss Me Guido, and she wrote a great review for Sundance, which actually got her movie sold. So I owe Janet Maslin. She doesn't know that, but
You're still doing a lot of acting.
I am. Yeah, I just did a movie with Anthony Hopkins called The World's Fastest Indian, which is going to come out in January.
Oh, wow.
Do people, I mean, I have to assume that even someone like Anthony Hopkins or anybody you work with must be like, you're a Kennedy.
No.
Look at the Kennedy glow.
In Hollywood? Yeah. Are you kidding me? No. People are way too self-obsessed in Hollywood to worry about where I come from.
Anthony
Hopkins wouldn't care.
Didn't your family have some relationship with Hollywood at some point
in
time?
They did, yeah. My grandfather actually ran RKO for a while. And
Joe Kennedy did?
Yeah, Joseph
Kennedy. And, of course, your father was a big actor?
Yeah, my father was a big actor and a member of the Rat Pack. Yeah.
Marilyn.
I used to go to Vegas. My dad used to go to Vegas and do the Rat Pack shows, and it was like Oz, you know. It was on the other side of the mountains.
Yeah,
and I used to go over there. And I remember the first time I walked on the set of Ocean's 11, it was like, I wanted to be there, man. I mean, you saw those guys having, they had fun.
I know what you mean.
I want to be those. I want to walk around in those really cool suits and steal all the money in a Vegas casino.
You're
man.
Sitting That's on the croupier's lap.
Yeah, there you go.
Give the kids some dice.
That's what my mom, when I was 2 years old, brought me and put me on a roulette table and bet red and lost.
Oh my God.
Yeah,
and that's where it started.
There you go. That was it. That was the end of it for me. Yeah.
Now, your book, Symptoms of Withdrawal, is a pretty candid look at your own life and your life within the Kennedy family. Did anybody in the family advise you to kind of curb what you were talking about?
Well, my family isn't big on books, especially ones that are written by them. So they were, you know, I mean, I think everybody was a little bit nervous. I wrote my Uncle Teddy a letter telling him what I was doing. Never heard back.
Oh, wow.
But, you know, you always know with my family where you stand. And they're supportive. I got some calls. In this book, I purposely did not include an index. I said, look, in the back of the book, you go to the index, and it says, I didn't include an index, so members of my family can't go to the index and just read what was written about them, which is their habit. And I got calls from some of my cousins thinking that was kind of funny. So.
And then they're going, but what page am I on?
Yeah, right. Yeah. But really.
That's right, man. They're like, yeah, what did you say about me?
Which cousin? I know one of your cousins has a show here.
Yeah, Bobby Kennedy. Yeah, the Ring of Fire, I think.
Yeah, Ring of Fire with Mike Papantonio. Sure.
Are you guys all pretty close, though? I mean,
yeah, we are. Yeah, listen, I grew up, it was like having 28 brothers and sisters. We've grown, you know, we have our own lives now, sure. Thankfully. Yeah. I am 50. Okay. It's not like we're going to the Cape and hanging out in the sandbox anymore.
But not as often, you mean?
Not as often.
You bring your kids up there, don't you?
They're still a compound up there, isn't it? Yeah, they're still. Smaller now.
Is it? Yeah. So now you talk about it. Now, surprising that a Kennedy would have a drinking problem.
No.
Which
Kennedy would that be?
I know. Outside of you, I have no idea. I'm just speculating. But you did get sober, and you spent a lot of time in the book talking about being a life-transforming experience. I got sober myself about 6 years ago.
Congratulations.
Thank you very much. And you've got how long?
19 plus.
Oh, congratulations to you. But now, it must have got pretty bad. I mean, I imagine a Kennedy's habit must have been exhausting.
Oh, no. Stereotyping the poor people.
Yeah, no, it was bad.
You can stereotype the Kennedys acting like a Kennedy.
When you get, you got a trust fund, you use it. Yeah. Right?
How bad did it get, man? Where were you when you hit
that's going to endear me to a lot of people. I know.
What, you think you're surprising them? Wait a minute.
It wasn't that big a trust fund.
Oh, now we
can. It went fast. Yeah, listen.
Oh, poor Kennedy.
I know, poor Kennedy.
There you go.
Where were you when you hit bottom, though? What made you change?
Man, it's like you're an alcoholic or a drug addict. It's like getting hit in the head with a baseball bat.
Sure.
For 8 or 9 years, and finally go enough.
Yeah, that finally realize like it's not fun.
No, getting hit in the head with a baseball bat. I describe addiction as similar to dancing with an 800-pound gorilla. You keep dancing till the gorilla stops dancing. My gorilla went into full Macarena for about 8 years.
Well, good for you because it definitely is an amazing second chance at life when you get sober, and it must be great.
To bring the Christians into this, it is kind of like being reborn. Mm-hmm. I feel like I've had two very distinct lives.
Really?
Yeah. One very dark and fun, and the other one very light and fun.
Ah, there you go.
The only problem
that happens is when the dark guy goes, come on, let's just go one more time. You're like, no, we're not doing that. Right. We're light and fun now.
Right.
Now, you went to Cuba.
I did, yeah. I actually did a movie called 13 Days. It was about the Cuban Missile Crisis, and I went with Costner. Kevin Costner was the star of it. It was about, you know, when we almost blew ourselves up in the 60s. And most people don't know that.
I saw that movie.
You know, it was actually a really good movie. And I went down there with Costner to show the film. I sat next to Fidel Castro and watched that movie about the Kennedys dealing with Fidel, and he was like a kid watching home movies. He was like,
really?
It was such a trip, man. He was like, you know, who's that? What? That's Dean Acheson. You know, it's like you could hear him speaking in Spanish. And at the end of the movie, he got up and he said, "You've made a great movie, but you ignored Cuba. Now you have to make a movie about what was going on in Cuba for those 13 days." And he said, "Kevin, I want you to play me."
Really?
Kevin's a little weak on the accent, so.
So you said, I'll do it.
Mr. President, I'll do it.
That would be insane if Kennedy playing Castro.
Wouldn't that be good?
Yeah, it'd be
it's kind of a marketing
closure.
Thing. Yeah, totally.
Closure.
Yeah, it was. But it got me to Cuba for 2 years, and it's a remarkable country. And what it's a remarkable place, and what we've done there for the last 40 years is a crime.
Now, he, Castro, never held it against you that you were a Kennedy, and, of course, your uncle tried to overthrow him.
Right, right. No, he didn't. As a matter of fact, he said to me that he believed that if John Kennedy and Robert Kennedy had lived, the embargo would have been lifted. And in fact, they just declassified some papers that my uncle Bobby wrote to the State Department advocating the lifting of the travel ban to Cuba in 1963. So I think Castro was right. I think if John Kennedy and Robert Kennedy lived, we would not have an embargo against Cuba.
Was it true that your uncle, the president, ordered several boxes of a particular type of Cuban cigar just before the embargo?
That is a legend that he actually had Pierre Salinger go out and buy up all of the Cuban cigars,
yeah.
All of the Cuban cigars in Washington before he signed that embargo.
And is it true or not?
I would imagine I wasn't there, but I could imagine it was true.
So now, okay, well let's get back to your. How old were you when they took you to Vegas for the first time? When Marilyn Monroe, you met her, I assume.
Well, but she taught me how to do the twist.
No,
I swear.
Really?
To God, yeah, when I was.
Were
like,
you old
enough?
That must have been. You must have been. Thank you, God.
No, but I'll tell you what, everybody asks me that. They go, what was it like watching Marilyn Monroe do the twist? And I say, well, I didn't really get it, but the adults got it.
Yeah,
so,
yeah, yeah.
Like, as a five-year-old kid, you get that the parents are, like,
whoa.
Excited.
Yeah.
And they were excited. Yeah, she had a way of exciting people.
Now, in terms of the Rat Pack, I assume you met Sinatra and all the guys.
Yeah,
and
Sinatra was my my sister Victoria's godfather.
Right.
And I had godfather envy.
You know? Oh, wow.
Who'd you get?
I got this guy named Peter Sabiston who was a wonderful guy. But it wasn't Frank Sinatra. Sinatra would come over to our house, and he'd bring these incredibly inappropriate presents for a four-year-old girl.
Right? Oh, really?
Yeah, to my sister, and I'd be like, what about me?
what's an inappropriate present?
Here's something like
a pony.
Diamond earrings? I don't know. Something...
But a little lady.
His yeah,
is a
right.
Woman,
his
a little
is some,
lady.
Yeah, right, right.
Yeah. Yeah. And you got like, and here for you,
here's a St. Christopher's medal.
Oh, <God.
laughs> yeah, there you go. That was great.
Now, so do you talk to Carolyn?
I do.
And
yeah.
You talk to.
I talk to all my cousins. They're all.
That's amazing.
Wonderful.
That they're all. They're
next
all
time
tight.
You talk to her, could you tell her that Marin used to have a crush on her?
I did. I had a crush on her. This is a long time ago.
Yeah,
a lot of people did?
I'm sure.
Yeah. Well, the book is Symptoms of Withdrawal. Christopher Kennedy Wofford has been our guest. Thanks for hanging out.
My pleasure.
Thank you so much.
And stay here for just a second longer, and we'll do these things. For those of you who are just tuning in, here are a few highlights of what we talked about on the program. It's time for today's Morning Sedition Cliff Notes. The U.S. military reportedly killed another alleged number two leader of Al-Qaeda in Iraq. Al-Qaeda released a statement saying, the joke is on the Americans, he was going to blow himself up tomorrow anyway. Intelligence sources say this may have been Al-Qaeda's third most dangerous second in command. Microsoft and Intel are teaming up to create the next generation of DVDs. HD DVDs will allow computer users to watch their lives passing them by in vivid three-dimensional color. Scientists will use satellites to monitor panda sex across the globe. Scientists have discovered that one of the main drawbacks to panda breeding is, in spite of what humans think, pandas just aren't adorable looking to each other. One problem with the pandas' lack of breeding is, as they get older, they have a tendency to put on weight and just lay around. Today's phrase just dropped into conversation. Michael Brown is still on the FEMA payroll as a consultant to assess what went wrong in hurricane response. Wake up, sheeple. That's like paying the tiger to get to the bottom of what happened to Roy. If this guy could shift relief supplies like he shifts blame, there wouldn't have been a problem.
No.
Well, those are your Morning Sedition Cliff Notes. Again, Christopher Kennedy Wofford, thank you for being
Thanks
here.
A lot. Great to be here,
We'll
guys.
Be back in a second to close things up, so hang out. It's 46 past the hour.
MorningSedition.com. Our guests, our comedy, your blog. MorningSedition.com. Air America Radio.
Hey!
And it's 51 past the hour. All right, let's land this thing. This is Morning Sedition. I'm Mark Maron. That's Mark Riley.
Hi!
Good morning, geniuses, philosophers, kings and queens, working class heroes, lurking conservatives, and all you funky ladies. It's been a great show, Riley.
Thank you very much. Did you go outside and get a shot of melanin while you were gone?
I certainly did, and I can't wait to get home to my cats and my wife, Mishna.
Oh, your wife, Mishna's home?
Can you imagine if I was married to a Mishna?
No, as a matter of fact, I probably can't.
You couldn't. You know,
I couldn't imagine that.
I tell you.
Mark.
You know, I have that. Have the old Derek Jeter syndrome this morning.
Oh, you down with the jungle fever thing, huh?
I'm going to have to write a threatening letter to you.
Yeah, so how you doing there, Mark?
Just fine.
You doing all right?
Yeah, they always call us in, you know, for these cameo appearances to replace
certain other people. All right, well, let's do a little news as long as we're doing cameos, okay?
Thank you. You know, I don't get an identity. I mean, you're not going to reveal who I am or...
Oh, I thought everybody knew who you were.
All right, that's...
Okay, I'll identify you.
That's all right. You know,
sitting
modest.
In for Mark Maron in this segment. None other than Wayne Gilman, a.k.a. News Daddy.
Good morning to everyone.
There you go. Going with the deep voice. You've been hanging out with some of our local personalities with them deep voices? Anyway, I don't understand how this is happening, but you know, Anna Nicole Smith is going to be at the Supreme Court.
Is that right? Why? Yeah.
Well, because the Supreme Court is now going to be hearing her case where she wants a new chance at some of her dead husband's money.
That's still going on?
Well, it wasn't. But, you know, she originally got $474 million. That was reduced to $89 million. Then it was thrown out altogether by that pesky Ninth Circuit Court of Appeals in San Francisco. And that court said that a Texas probate court's decision that the oil man's son was his sole heir, that decision should stand. So now the Supreme Court is giving her a second shot at the apple.
Unbelievable. Some women never get enough.
But you know what? But you know, I'm going to tell you something. This is going to be very interesting because it's going to come during this current term, right? Mm-hmm. During the same time that all of the focus is going to be on Bush's naming of a new nominee to the Supreme Court.
Right.
So now all of a sudden you're going to have that playing to an entirely new and much larger audience.
So this is a distraction, you're saying?
No, what I'm saying is it's going to make people look at the Supreme Court that might not ordinarily look at the Supreme Court.
Okay.
Let's phrase it. There's pervos out here, right?
Right.
And they hear Anna Nicole Smith is going anywhere in Washington, they're going to be there. And it certainly is. She now apparently is going to be at the proceedings.
Scary.
Scary?
You know.
Well, I guess. I don't know.
What if she turned out to be Bush's next pick?
For what? You know, you're a sick human being. In other news this morning, the police chief of New Orleans.
I know, and I'm really taken back by this.
Eddie Compass quit. And this was after it was revealed that about 15% of the New Orleans Police Department went AWOL during Hurricane Katrina. They're going to be investigated for those absences without permission. And then the Times-Picayune in an editorial yesterday took him to task for exaggerating what was going on in the Superdome and the Convention Center.
Well, as it turned out, it was really no exaggeration.
I
mean, with regard to all the heinous crimes that were taking place, there were reports of rapes, lootings, and things of that nature.
Most of them did not happen.
But the thing is, the fact of the matter is that it seems at this point that he has been pressured to step down in spite of all that went on around him. In that time of crisis, when you juxtapose that with what we heard yesterday out of Michael Brown...
Oh, no. I mean, look, he bit the bullet a lot better than Michael Brown did. He didn't try and blame everybody else.
I mean, the whole thing has just turned into a circus.
Well, it is a circus, but it's a high-stakes circus. Remember, you got all of this. Did you know that there was a $236 million contract given to Carnival Cruises for three ships to be housed in New Orleans? And apparently they've been barely used through all of this.
It's, you know, I don't know. I mean, the thing is that this is just another example of where this administration has just gone awry with all of his problems.
We got a little bit of time left, and Wayne, I know this story will warm the cockles of your heart because we've both heard this story before. Mm. There's a white Tennessee lawmaker who's upset because he tried to become part of that state's black legislative caucus, and now he's calling them just like the Klan. Can you imagine? You remember there was a white guy that tried to be in one of the, was it the CBC or the Congressional
right,
Black
some
Caucus?
Some years ago.
Some years ago, there right. was a white guy that wanted, mm-hmm. And you know, Chown said, well, prove I'm not black. So, I don't know, you know, I'm not sure exactly what the deal is here. This guy is apparently one of those guys who just wants to disrupt the legislative caucus in Tennessee.
Mm.
And to compare them to the Klan, to put up something on his website under the heading I Too Dream, referring to Martin Luther King, putting excerpts of Martin Luther King, is grossly insulting in case this lawmaker doesn't understand that. That's for you, Representative Stacey Campfield. All right? Because, I mean, that's just ridiculous.
It is. And this ridiculous. Is in Tennessee.
This is in Tennessee. Mm. Part of the 50 states, last I checked.
Yes.
So, you know, we see this kind of foolishness going on, you know, in the past, in the present. Hopefully it won't go on in the future, though.
I don't know. I mean, the way this country has been going with all that has happened, I guess I shouldn't even say the country. It's just this administration that we have in Washington.
Yeah. Well, you know, the administration in Washington is just such a bunch of bumbling incompetence. Mm-hmm. I'm assuming that most people in this country can't wait for next year to get rid of some of them. They're not going to get rid of all of
right.
them. You know, there's always going to be some hammock for guys like Michael Brown and other bindle stiffs in the administration.
But you're absolutely right. It's not to say that we haven't been through that with some Democrats, but the fact of the matter is that I hope at this point people are really paying attention to what is going on. It sounds like our show has come to a
remember
conclusion.
Remember back in the day? The clock on the wall. It's time to get out of here.
Yeah, thanks for right. being Mark Maron for a segment, Wayne.
Yeah. Yeah, thanks,
thank
Wayne.
You, Brendan.
Thanks, Wayne. Mark.
Well, I get to do this again.
Yeah, right. Coming up tomorrow, we've got Democratic Congresswoman Maxine Waters from California, call from Future Mark, an installment of Morning Sedition Radio Theater. Thanks, Wayne. See you tomorrow, Air America Radio.